Welcome to another 4th and 1. Nick, this is less celebratory than I feel like it should have been, because I feel like there were moments in that game that I was confident that this was going to be when Patrick Mahomes really started to write his legacy, that we were going to see that passing of the torch moment. None bigger than Charvarius' Ward interception that wasn't, because of the D Ford offside penalty. And I think it's foolish to ever blame a loss on one thing. I mean, obviously that would have sealed it.
Right.
Maybe the coin toss would have made things go a different way. But there's a million things you could point to, and there's a million things you could point to in this game. And we're going to get to that, because that's what this is about. This is about dissecting what happened. And what happened on Sunday at Arrowhead Stadium was the Chiefs and Patriots played the first overtime AFC Championship game since the Broncos and Browns in the 1986 season. So that would be what, 32 years?
Yeah, almost. Yeah, 32.
Yeah, 32 years, and that would make it the second AFC Championship game to go to overtime since the merger, which would make it 48 years. So, a historic game, just not historic in the ways that I think Chiefs fans wanted it to be.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's, I know there's gonna be a lot of people listening right now that are sad, disappointed, frustrated, irritated, and I totally get all that. And I know there's some that are gonna wonder, was this their only opportunity to get to the Super Bowl? Can they recapture this? Can they do all that? I mean, because I've gotten some of those questions on Twitter already, and I completely get all of them. For me, as you can tell right now, you've seen me down before. I'm not down right now. I'm not sad. I'm not upset. I mean, would it have been cool to see them go to the Super Bowl and to win AFC Championship? Yeah, that would have been awesome. But like I told you a couple weeks ago on this podcast, my goal is for them to break what we consider the curse, to get over that, to know, let this team know mentally that they're capable of getting there. That was the first step, and Mahomes needed that, and Mahomes needed this experience tonight, regardless of how it did or didn't go. So I was happy that they were able to battle back and play the game that they did, and I'm ecstatic that Mahomes got that opportunity, and some of the young guys on the core for the future got that chance, because I see this team, and I've seen this team for a while, as kind of that bridge to where from last year's failures to
quarter century's failures,
more so in terms of last year roster wise,
yeah,
a lot of the failures that you were starting to weed out on this team to get to where you wanted to go. And that's where I feel like this roster's going to start to head. So I think the group that you're bringing back next year, the people I assume they're bringing back, or that I would bring back, the future's bright. There's some stuff you got to add, some stuff you're going to have to change if you want to get back to this moment or have a better opportunity at this moment. But I mean, I'm ecstatic that Mahomes got that experience.
All right, and look, guys, we're gonna keep up this podcast during the off season too, and so in the coming weeks we're gonna talk about all that. We're gonna go to what moves we think the Chiefs should make, what moves we think they should do in the draft, and all that kind of stuff. But today, obviously, we're dissecting that AFC Championship game, and for me, I had a little bit different feeling because you were nervous all day, all week, really, looking forward to this game. I think you can attest, I was fine right up until the last 3 minutes of the game. And then at that point, I could smell a Super Bowl, and I started getting pretty antsy. And of course, it all fell apart. But let's look into, first of all, let's hear from Andy Reid on the loss. And big man is, sets the tone for this team. So let's hear what he was thinking coming out of this one.
Listen, I'm proud of our players for the effort that they gave this year. This was a tough one. This one hurts, as it does with our fans, I know. And I'm proud of our fans. I mean, they were phenomenal today. And, it's a great community. And this was we were trying to make this a community effort. And we came up a little short. So, but this gives us a little bit of what we have looking forward to us in the future. And that's where we'll go after we're done aching here. So, and it's a bright future, and we've got good players, and, we'll we'll get over the hump here, the big hump. So that's this game right here. So anyways, with that, my hat's off to the Patriots. They did a great job today. And Bill and Tom, that last drive was in overtime was a heck of a job on their part.
Andy, what did you say to the players after
the game? A little bit what I just mentioned here, Sal, just that it's going to hurt, which I could obviously see. That's important. That's how you get better. And this team has done that throughout the season. When the chips were down, we fought back and did a little bit in this game here, but we came up a little short. So let it drive you through the off season and have this feeling that hurt, and let that carry you through so that you don't experience it again.
That was Andy Reid talking about how he handled it. Similar to what you touched on, I mean, he doesn't sound like a man who's defeated. He sounds like a man who's already gearing up for 2019. And, I think he's probably tired of seeing Bill Belichick in the postseason. Belichick got him in a Super Bowl back when he was with the Eagles, got him a few years ago in a game up in New England, got him again on Sunday. So I don't think he's going to be disappointed if Tom and Mr. Belichick ride off into the sunset at some point.
I'm not gonna believe that because I
don't know when they signed a deal with the devil to go to all these Super Bowls. I don't know what the terms were, so I don't know when it expires, but this will be the third straight Super Bowl for them, ninth overall, I believe. This was the eighth straight AFC championship game that they were playing in, so rumors of the Patriots dynasty, fueled mostly by Nick Wright, I feel like, former Chiefs radio guy, slightly overstated. But hey, I got to ask, are you in the crowd that blames the coin toss for the loss? Because I know a lot of people are talking about how, it's the coin toss. Are you in that crowd that the NFL's overtime rule screwed the Chiefs?
No, because the Chiefs had plenty of opportunities before it even
Four whole quarters before
they
that,
had,
right?
They had a whole first half to put stuff together and to score
even 1 point.
Yeah, to take the punches and the counter punches, and they had their opportunities in the first half to make sure that it never came down to the final 3 minutes. They had a whole week to figure that out and to assume what Belichick and them were going to do. I mean, they had all the opportunities in the world, and it took them until halftime to make the proper adjustments to do it. So that's on the coaching staff on both sides of the ball. That's on them.
I agree. I think they got out coached.
In the first half, they certainly did.
Well, I would
argue. And in the final two drives defensively, they did.
No, I was going to say, I would argue at the beginning and the end of the game, they got out coached on defense. Yeah. And the first half, they got out coached on offense.
Yes.
I think Belichick had Reed's number in the first half. And I think that at the outset, Josh McDaniels had Bob Sutton's number. And when it mattered at the end, Brady was too good and Bob Sutton was too predictable.
Right.
I think the overtime rules are flawed. I would have loved to see the Chiefs have a chance to come back down, try to tie the game up with a touchdown, and then let it go to next score wins type scenario. I'll be honest, I still think the Chiefs lose in that scenario. I still think Tom Brady is, even if the Chiefs go down and get the touchdown to match, I still think they're going to give the ball back to Tom Brady, and he's going to go down and he's going to take advantage of what was the Achilles heel for the team all year, which was one of the worst defenses in the NFL. And it played like it. And the one strength they had all season, rushing the quarterback, the Patriots managed to neutralize. So anyway, let's get to the defensive flaws here, because I think you've got to talk about the defense, because when it mattered most, the defense once again failed the Chiefs.
Right.
We've already talked about the NFL overtime rules, and I don't think either one of us blame that strictly for it.
No.
What about Dee Ford's offsides penalty? Because obviously that interception, Charvarius Ward had, should have ended the game. And I think when we all saw the little yellow flag pop up in the bottom right hand corner of the broadcast, I think hearts were sinking across Kansas City at that moment. Because I know I was. I was starting to think, oh my gosh, the Chiefs are really going to the Super Bowl, and you know, and it was taking me a minute to process it. I hadn't started jumping up and down, cheering, celebrating, because I don't think it had hit me yet that this was really happening. And then, of course, you saw the flag and you realized what had happened. So, how much culpability does Dee Ford have in ruining this dream for an entire city?
I'm not going to place all the blame on him. I'm not going to say he's the sole reason the whole thing had happened, because they still had plenty of plays after that to stop him. And they didn't. And Sutton didn't. And that's not a surprise, because Sutton hasn't been capable of doing that for 6 years. That's just the reality of it. But what I will say, I mean, in that moment, he messed up on that play. And that is one of the instances that cost them from going to the Super Bowl, from being able to, quote-unquote, get over that big hump, as Andy said earlier, to get to where they wanted to go. And in all actuality, for the most part, Dee Ford really wasn't present in much of that game.
He didn't have a tackle. Didn't have a quarterback hurry. The only quarterback hurry came from Derek Nnadi, the rookie defensive tackle. I mean, yeah. I think the other 93 snaps that Dee Ford no-showed were as much of a problem as the one snap that people paid attention to him when he got the offside penalty.
Correct. And like you said it perfectly, people are paying attention to that specific one, because that was the moment that every single person truly believed. They're like, oh my gosh, we actually are doing this. And then they're like, oh. And then, you know, the wind got taken out of their sail.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I hate to say it, but that's just what's happened to this franchise for so long. And I'm going to end up saying it in this.
Is this the Dee Ford's offsides game now?
No, to me, it's I'm gonna call it the routine Sutton failure.
Can we work butterscotch in there somehow?
However you want to. I mean, that's just the way it is, man. I mean, at the end of the day, elite quarterbacks always expose Sutton's predictability, and they always do it.
Let's hear real quick, though. You know, Dee Ford at least did talk to reporters and take ownership. Let's hear from him about the fateful offsides.
In these games, every play counts. Every play counts.
Was it split second too early? Or?
No, they said I was in the neutral zone. I got to see the ball.
What did you feel about that?
I got to see the ball.
I mean, look. Can't disagree. Look, there's literally no excuse for lining up offsides as a defensive player. It should never happen. To me, it's like the wide receiver who either can't get on the line of scrimmage or cover cover somebody up, that should have been an eligible receiver. Because, defensively, you can see the ball.
Yeah.
In the other situation, you see it at the high school level and every level in football. You can literally look out to the... That's one of the rules. You can literally look out to the official and ask him if you're in a legal position.
Yeah.
So if you don't do that and you fail at that, then to me that's on you. There's no excuse for that. And I don't know. Maybe he lined up in the neutral zone, and maybe it dovetails in with this. I really thought the inability to get pressure on Brady all game was part of it. And so maybe he was trying to get a little bit of an edge, hoping that the refs would cut him a break so that he could maybe get around that corner and finally get that sack. How much of the blame do you think the pass rush's no-show overall deserves for what happened on Sunday?
Well, I'm going to do it in three folds here. First is what we talked about in the Friday podcast, to where I said in my 4th-and-1 game plan article and then on the podcast, they were going to run at Dee Ford. They were going to run at Chris Jones. They were going to run at Justin Houston. They were going to run at that team because they were trying to tire them out when it came down to crunch time and to make sure that they didn't have that full tank of gas.
No juice.
To be able to rush the passer. And when you play physical run blocking, and when you do physical run blocking, and you play that power physical type of scheme, and you set that attitude and that tempo, which the Patriots did a phenomenal job of in the first half there, when you do that, players get tired. And here's the reality of it. The Chiefs really don't have another pass rusher outside of Houston and Ford on that football team right now. Chris Jones, you could say. But I'm saying other than those three guys, you genuinely don't have any guys that can pass rush. And the sad thing is, the rest of the guys that you have, Derek Nnadi is a good run stuffer. Alan Bailey's strong, but he's not a blend of what you need long term.
Bailey's a fine rotational player.
Yeah, but he's. We'll see what happens in free agency. But my point is, you don't have a good blend in your rotation to where you can rotate this guy in your run defense and not lose anything. You can rotate this pass rusher and not lose anything. You don't have an even balance on that defensive line. So whenever somebody schemes at it in that specific way, they're going to exploit it. So, I mean, that's the unfortunate part there. The second part is Brady was going to get the ball out quick, and he was able to because they didn't really jam Edelman and some of the other guys. They didn't jam them, and when you don't jam them and do what the Patriots did to the Chiefs' offense, guess what happens? Brady can get that ball out in 2.5 seconds, and the pass rush just wasted their time. And then, lastly, the other part is they really weren't creative with their rushes. You need to go wide nines, and you need to come at Brady that way if you truly want to try to get to him at an angle.
It was almost like it might have even been the first drive. One of the few times that the Patriots passed, the Chiefs did bring kind of an exotic pressure.
They tried it,
and it didn't work, and it didn't get home. And I feel like it was almost as if Sutton said, "Well, that didn't work," and just like threw it out. And I'm like, I was so happy that he had at least tried it.
Sure.
And I thought, oh man, maybe he is gonna do what he did in the second half against the Colts. Maybe he's gonna bring, some fire.
Mm-hmm.
And it just wasn't there. And we'll get to this here. Sutton's inability to solve the third and long puzzle. They didn't do a good job, especially early, of winning on first and second downs.
Mm-hmm.
And creating those third and long situations where the pass rush could have been more effective. In fact, they were terrible at it. I think they only had one third and long in those first two drives, and they gave up the conversion on it. But it was maddening to watch them down the stretch in third and 9, third and 10, third and 8. Tony Romo's literally calling exactly what they're going to do in a play to Julian Edelman, another one to Julian Edelman, and on the slant to Gronkowski.
Mm-hmm.
And if Romo can do that watching from the booth, you've got to think somebody in the Chiefs organization could figure that out too.
Should.
And
that's what they get paid for.
And they didn't. And it just felt like the Chiefs had decided this is the coverage we're going to run in third and long. And then when all evidence showed that it wasn't going to be effective, because the Patriots, by the way, converted 13 of 19 third downs,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of them of the third and long variety, when all evidence, all empirical data that you had said, this plan that we had is not working, rather than adjust it, they just said, no, we're going to stick to our guns, and it burned them. They got roasted.
Well, and that's part of Bob Sutton. That's just kind of who that guy is when he plays elite quarterbacks. He gets into a certain pattern, and that's what he does. That's why Rodgers picked him apart a couple years ago, and that's why Rivers picked him apart on that Thursday night. He mm-hmm. really exposed him over the middle to where Rivers was able to take full advantage of it, and they did that again today because the problem is that a big problem is that Sutton just tries to do so many. He thinks he's doing all these different things to keep the quarterback guessing and stuff. But at the end of the day, if I can predict what you're going to do, and with Edelman, the way they just kept motioning him because they knew they were going to get free releases, and they just worked him over the middle. And he's one of the smartest route runners there is.
Yeah.
So he knows where to sit down in zones if you're going to run that. You have to jam him to disrupt the time. Bob didn't do that. He didn't. They obviously didn't work on it during the week. Or if they did, they didn't execute it in the game. So in that regard, I mean, that's coaching failure. That's what that is.
And by the way, one of the big problems the Chiefs had in the first half was the fact that the Patriots, who are a good press man team,
mm-hmm.
smothered the ever-loving snot out mm-hmm. of the Chiefs receivers, and those guys couldn't get off press coverage. And then, of course, they also gave safety help over the top. And Tyreek only had the one catch, the 42-yarder, and then was held in check
mm-hmm.
The entire game. Want to go through two players real quick, and run out of time in this A block. But Eric Berry obviously played. He played in three games this year. The Chiefs lost all three. Not that it was necessarily Eric Berry's fault. I mean, they were playing the Chargers, the Seahawks, and the Patriots. I mean, those are three playoff teams, three teams that had very good seasons. But was it sad to see Eric Berry getting roasted by Rob Gronkowski in two really key situations there late in the fourth quarter and then again in overtime on that slant? because that very well, you know, I mean, that may be the last we've seen of Eric Berry with the Chiefs, you know, in any meaningful sense, you know, and that just didn't feel fitting to me.
Well, I mean, when you're putting him in that position, and he's getting isolated like that against Gronkowski, who's played a majority of the season, and Berry, who, like you said, barely in his third game, he's going to be a step or two slow because he hasn't been out there on a regular basis. So that's going to happen. And he was a step or two slow against Gronkowski, who's got a laundry list of injuries recently.
Yeah.
And Gronk's not at 100%. I mean, that's the reality. And I know the report came out on Sunday morning that he's debating about retiring and going into acting here pretty soon.
Yeah.
So this is kind of his...
I thought about it last year, too, I think.
Yeah, and this is kind of his swan song, and I've always kind of considered that to be the... This is, I think this is Gronk's kind of final tour of playing football. And so, I mean, he's a shell of his former self.
Yeah, but he...
Other than run blocking, where he's still amazing.
Yeah, but he got Barry on the vertical route late in the fourth quarter, and then he was able to sell... That vertical again, got Barry to take a false step outside and then just roasted him on the slant. So.
And what I'm getting at is...
And Sorensen wasn't there.
Yeah, and what I'm getting at is Barry... Gronk, to me, is at like 60% of who he was, maybe 50, and Barry couldn't even stop that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of where the concern is, and I know it came out that Eric Berry may have surgery to... repair the issue that he has, and I'm just saying if that happens, that's another that's another long recovery, and who knows how that's all going to go.
Almost wish if that was the case, if that's the decision you were going to make, do it back in August.
It should have been done. Yeah, if that's the road you were going to go down, and you still want to play, then you should have done it a while ago.
Do it back in August. So what's the best hope, that he comes back and he's healthy from that, or are you hoping that maybe at some point? Talk of a medical retirement picks up, because obviously the Chiefs can't get out from under his contract without it being a massive cap hit this year. So
I'll be curious what they chat about and what they entertain in that regard. I personally, I'm kind of hoping everybody just goes their separate ways. I think it's time for everybody to just kind of move on in that regard. But he may want to come back and go to Super Bowl and do this and that and think that he can, and that's fine. So. I mean, we'll see what happens, but it's that's what I'm saying. I feel like this was a changing of the guard game in terms of where they need to go.
The other guy, Anthony Hitchens, and look, he ended up with 14 tackles, tied for the team lead, 7 solo. He's a guy that the Chiefs are paying 5 years, $45 million. I mean, they're locked in with him again next year because he would be $17.7 million in dead cap if they tried to cut him. He was terrible today. I don't care if he had 14 tackles. He got run over, pushed back. He is not what you want from middle linebacker. And I mean, I think he was a major part of the problem with that defense.
Well, and here's where I'm going to defend him in this regard, is that one, he's in the wrong scheme to begin with. He should be in a 4-3 scheme.
I understand, but you knew what scheme you ran when you signed him.
Yeah, no, and that's where that's part of that's on the defensive coaching staff, and then another part of that's on the front office and them not being on the same page in that regard. I mean, what you saw on tape from him coming from Dallas is he's just as athletic as Derek Johnson was in that regard. He's a solid zone coverage, you know, linebacker. He can drop back better than Raglan, obviously, and he's kind of on par with Dorian O'Daniel in that regard. I know, but I'm talking.
Hey, Raglan, you drop back and get a pick today.
I'm talking with what's on the roster. And the other thing is, Hitchens is a guy who's a downhill attack type of individual. That's where his skill set is. So when you make him read and react, you waste his skill set, you waste your scheme, you waste your time. So again, that's where that marriage didn't work between the front office vision, in my opinion, and the defensive scheme.
Well, but even when he did get downhill against the run game, he missed tackles. And even when he did meet the guy in the gap, he got bowled over and pushed back by running backs who he outweighs by 20 or 30 pounds. I just wasn't impressed with his physicality. And I think that you needed somebody at the inside linebacker spot who could set a tone. You needed somebody who could be a thumper. I thought maybe Reggie Raglan could, but he's too slow.
Yeah.
And he's too ineffective. You can't use him all three downs because of that in a lot of situations. Mm-hmm. It's why Dorian O'Daniel, who was missed sorely today, by the way, or at least in the SEC championship
players,
game.
Yes.
I feel like, you know, they really could have used him. But Hitchens was supposed to be that guy. And I just think that Well, I just hope that they switch defensive schemes next year, and then if they do that, maybe he can be a little bit more effective. Maybe they can find better ways to use Chris Jones, assuming they bring him back and things like that. And I think the defense. I'm not saying that he's not talented. I thought he was incredibly disappointing throughout the entire season.
And essentially what I'm saying is, in my mind, he's a 4-3 linebacker. You got to decide if he's a Will or he's a Sam linebacker for strong side, you know, weak side. And then you need to, and this is where I think their problem is, especially with their nickel sub package, and this is why they got roasted on a regular basis, is the fact that they just don't have a stout defensive line across the board that, especially in the interior, on a collective base, on a regular basis, that can keep from getting bowled over and allow Hitchens to move the way that he needs to, or both inside linebackers.
Yeah, just don't get blown off the ball.
And that's where you got to kind of decide, in a position coach perspective, are they teaching them what they need to be taught in terms of how to disengage from blocks? Because collectively, they're bad at that in the front seven in general.
All right, guys, we're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about some of the other glaring problems that cropped up and cost the Chiefs the SEC Championship game here on 4th and 1.
Wake up with questions, especially this time of year. Snow or no snow? So, what's the best way to get to work? 41 Action News today. Instant traffic updates and KC's most accurate forecast. What you need to start your morning. Weekdays from 4:30 to 7.
Cutting the cable cord? 41 Action News is now on Roku. Search KSHB. Add our channel and you're set. All of our newscasts stream live. No other station in Kansas City can say that. Get clear, complete coverage on 41 Action News now on Roku.
In a city where anything can happen, you deserve the truth. We don't just report the stories, we find the stories. Never backing down, never shutting down, getting the answers you deserve. This is our promise to you, every day, every night.
Stand by. 3, 2, 1.
41 Action News at 10. Clear, complete coverage.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. And look, you know, if you're not joining this podcast 27 minutes in, then you heard us tear apart the defensive performance. A lot of blame to go around, I think. Anybody else that's worth singling out there? I thought Daniel Sorensen was kind of
he struggled in the first half.
Yeah. Well, he struggled in the first half. He was pretty bad trying to defend James White in the screen game and stuff like that. But man, late in the game when they needed some plays on that 4th and short, that could have, if the Patriots kick it, could have ended that game in overtime or forced the Chiefs to go for a touchdown.
An interception too.
But Sorensen made a great play, great individual effort on that 4th and inches. And then after the Edelman controversy with the muffed punt, or was it not, Sorensen gets the tip pass for the interception and I really thought that was ironically a key moment, because I think the overturn had obviously sucked the life out of that stadium a little bit. But I think even if the call had stood, I think that the 5-minute delay, 6-minute delay, whatever it was, to sort all that out had kind of killed the momentum. And then when the very next play, the Chiefs defense came up with an interception, I thought it really brought some energy back into the building. So in a weird way, I think it kind of worked out to the Chiefs' favor in that moment that the call went against him. And Sorensen made some big plays. And look, he had 14 tackles, 11 solo. So at the end of the day, I think you got to say, Sorensen, he gave you everything he had.
I will never question that.
Yeah. But look, man, let's not let the offense off the hook. Because they got shut out in the first half, man, and that's inexcusable. I know the Patriots had an 8-minute drive to start the game or whatever it was, but that's just inexcusable. Let's hear from Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, Mitch Morse, and Andy Ford talking about this loss, and kind of what went wrong.
We have a lot of young guys on this team, and it hurts. It hurts everybody. We knew we had the opportunities this game and this season, and we put in the work, but. We know that this can be a building block. It can be something that carries us in the future. I mean, right now it's the end, but hopefully it's just the beginning of a long time.
Frustrated with how I played personally. It's got to be better for my teammates. The way we fought, I mean, can't ask for more out of the guys. It's just kind of in a loss for words, man. It's a hell of a run, and it's it hurts to see it end the way it did today.
You know, I think the position we were in was kind of brought about by our, you know, the offensive line in particular, just the poor execution in the first half. You know, we scored 31 points in the second half, but we can't put our team in a position. Our defense battled like sons of guns, and yeah, when you lose a heart-wrenching one, you know, in the overtime, it's terrible. It's tough. So for us, it's just, you know, I got nothing for you except it was just, it's gut-wrenching for sure.
It still feels like the end, but once we get over it, it'll be the start of something special.
All right, that was a whole host of guys. Mahomes, Kelsey, yeah. Morse, D Ford. All right, so where do we put the blame on this offense? I mean, you know, Mahomes wasn't great, you know, in the first quarter. You know, he came out, overthrew the ball. I thought he was trying to force some passes to Sammy Watkins early, and then obviously takes that sack on the third down on, you know, in the first quarter that took him out of field goal range and, mm-hmm. You know, cost him some points there, you know. But was it on Andy? I mean, we're so used to seeing Andy do, you know, like script 15 plays and that go out and put points on the board. Was it just on, is it as simple as Bill Belichick getting a second bite at the apple was just better than Andy today?
For the first half, yeah, the Patriots, they gave the Chiefs something they'd never seen before. Because I know you and I kind of talked about, you thought the Ravens had thrown everything possible at them. I think it was you and I talked about it. I can't remember at this point.
Somebody talked about it.
Yeah, somebody talked about it. And the Patriots gave them some new stuff that they hadn't seen before, and they didn't have an answer for, and they weren't expecting.
But I feel like, I mean, the offensive line, the interior of the offensive line was having trouble passing off stunts and twists that they had seen. If they presumably they watched the film against the Chargers, they saw what they did the week before.
And that's one of the flaws of their O-line coach, Andy Heck. I mean, as I've said before, and people are probably tired of hearing this, the nameplates change, but the issues remain the same in that regard, to where his interior offensive line struggles with that year in and year out. And then when they finally get some guys who can do it, they end up becoming free agents and go elsewhere. Yeah. So then, you know, that's just kind of the reality. And, yeah, the offensive line had one of their worst pass protection games. And the thing is Pat Mahomes has been able to overcome some of it because he could get outside the pocket.
He did today.
In the first half, the way they were rushing up the field, they were trying to contain him like you would do with Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
And he was not a fan of that. So, I mean, they threw their best things at the O-line and at Mahomes, and they disrupted the timing like crazy with how they pressed. And it was not ideal all around.
Yeah, and the inability to generate a power run game, which we talked about how that was one of the areas where we thought Kareem Hunt made a difference. And it was glaring. I mean, look, Damian Williams played fine, but 10 carries for 30 yards. And the offense, they didn't have a power run game. When they got in trouble there, they couldn't just line up and smash the Patriots in the face like the Patriots had done to them,
right?
And force them to back off, force them to start playing a little bit more zone, mm-hmm. force them to stop, you know, playing the press man. They didn't have that without Kareem Hunt, and it hurt them,
right? And that's kind of the thing that I think was the biggest problem for them. Like you said, is when teams have done this throughout the year, especially up until the Rams game, because I believe it's the last game he played. Up until the Rams game, whenever the Chiefs got in trouble, they turned to Kareem offensively to help guide him through it.
And he would run over somebody and, or hurdle yeah. somebody.
Right,
or...
and he was kind of that fire starter that was always their solution to any of the problems that they had on offense. Anything that a defense threw at him or stuff was a little too big for Mahomes, like just hand it off to Kareem or pass it to Kareem and let him work his magic. And that was what they were able to do. And then they lost that identity, like we talked about on the Friday podcast, multiple games, and they were trying to figure it out and get it back. And here's the reality about Damian Williams. in my opinion, he doesn't see the holes well. I mean, he has speed. When you get him out in space, he does great. But he just...
And he's a good pass catcher.
Yeah. It's just he doesn't see the field the way that Kareem was able to and make the cuts the same way and break tackles and have the balance and have everything that Kareem did. And this is where the Chiefs desperately missed his presence. And this is, in all honesty, and this is what's the saddest thing, and I know it's going to bump some people out and some people may disagree. If Kareem doesn't put himself in the situations that he did and they had him on the football field today, I 100% believe they're in the Super Bowl and they wouldn't have had the issues they did in the first half.
I think
the Colts game would have been a bigger blowout the week before.
Yeah, I think it's very possible. And that stinks because I think Kareem put the Chiefs in a position where they had no choice.
Exactly. And he had to watch that game from wherever he was at if he did.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. I wonder how Kareem feels because he's got to, assuming he watched that game, he's got to know that he let those other guys down immensely.
Yep.
All right, let's hear from Patrick Mahomes real quick on the Patriots defense and what he thought of the job they did.
They challenged us. They came up, played man. Not a lot of teams have this year, and they put people in our face and they see how we responded. And the first half we struggled. We couldn't make anything happen. But then the second half, I feel like our guys took the challenge, and they were doing the same things, and we were just winning. And you have to do that. You have to find ways to win against one-on-one matchups, and we found ways in the second half.
All right, that's Patrick Mahomes. And here's the good news, man. A lot of teams are going to watch that game film, and they're going to say, hey, if you're going to beat the Chiefs, you got to get up in their face. You got to play man. And I think a lot of teams are going to try to do that. And so if I were you, I would take Tyreek Hill early in your fantasy drafts next year because if teams do that, I feel like Tyreek is going to go nuts.
And that's where the Chiefs, and we'll talk about this more in depth throughout the offseason, is that's where the Chiefs in their regard, they're going to have to continue to evolve as an offense and continue to add pieces because defense coordinators are going to watch that game. They're going to watch Ravens game. They're going to watch all of them. And they're going to throw some good game plans at them next year early on in the season to be able to confuse them. And the Chiefs are going to have to evolve as an offense to where they can constantly stay one or two steps ahead of a team like the Patriots did to them in the AFC Championship.
Last thing I wanted to mention on the offense, and Travis Kelce hinted at it when we heard from him earlier. I didn't think he played terrible, but I thought he had two just massive drops, and it's a problem we've seen with him. And I look, he's one of the best tight ends in the league, but I think, and nobody's ever going to be perfect, but I remember there was one, the Chiefs defense had finally gotten a stop, and then Tyreek ran backwards inexplicably on the punt return, and they get stuck at the 10, and I think there's a penalty on the punt return too and all that. Mm-hmm. But they had a chance to move the chains. They had a chance to get some momentum. They had a chance to maybe get a toehold in that game and break the voodoo that the Patriots had on them. And simple slant, and Kelce dropped it. And I felt like that was one of those sneaky, underrated moments that kind of sabotaged the game for the Chiefs.
Well, and unfortunately, Kelce's had a lot of great games this year. He's still a very important part of the offense. But there were times, especially, you remember, you and I talked about it in that Denver game.
This was not the only game that happened.
This isn't the only game where it seemed like he kind of mentally wasn't as checked into it as you would expect or hope. So, I mean, it's an unfortunate part for that to happen at the AFC Championship game. But, I mean, hey, it is. Unfortunately, it is what it is, and they're going to have to. They got to figure a lot of stuff out in the offseason with this offense.
All right. Hey, we're going to come back. We're going to wrap things up here on 4th and 1 after a disappointing but oddly encouraging AFC Championship game loss. And we're going to talk about that on the other side of this break.
This is Kansas City. Diverse, proud, tough. And no matter which side of this line you call home, we are there. Digging, fighting, asking. Now more than ever, we have your back. Shining the light with local stories that impact your life. Local stories you won't see anywhere else. 41 Action News. Clear, complete coverage.
Life can be busy, so we're working around your schedule. 41 Action News, the only station in town with clear, complete coverage at 6:30. And weather from the team certified most accurate. 41 Action News, weeknights at 6:30.
Look around our streets, our communities. are children. Now more than ever, we need the crime, we need the violence to stop. At 41 Action News, we say enough is enough. That's why we're taking action with Safe KC. Not just reporting the problems, but showing solutions with stories of hope, stories with answers. Because violence knows no race, no city, no zip code. Watch Safe KC only on 41 Action News and KSHB.com.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. Look, I mean, obviously the Chiefs lost another home playoff game. So they've lost 7 of the last 8. Everybody knows the history at this point. Whether this game goes down as the D Ford's offsides game or the bet against us bowl or whatever, which I still think was a weird thing for a team that had been to 8 straight AFC championship games and 2 straight Super Bowls. To hedge their bets on whatever. I think it was more, just talking point, just, something to do, something to pass time for the week, something to sell t-shirts on Julian Edelman's, website. But I feel like it'd be a disservice to even call this the D Ford's offsides game or anything like that. I think this was just as simple as you got out coached in the moment, you got out played in the moment. And you got beat by a team who was better than you on this particular day and had been slightly better than you, 3 weeks or 3 months earlier in the regular season. So, let's not act like we're surprised that this happened. But to me, this feels way more like a beginning than an end. And usually, like last year, when they blow the 18-point halftime lead against the Tennessee Titans, it just felt like a gut punch, man. It just felt like I needed a shower after that game. The year before, when they, blow it in very Chiefsy fashion against the Pittsburgh Steelers, it just felt gross and it felt very final. It felt like, ugh, God. Can they get back here? Can they possibly get back here? This doesn't feel like that at all. This feels like the start of something special.
If they make the proper moves that they need to, that like you and I've talked about, we'll write articles about in the off season. We'll do on the podcast. We'll both give our visions on everything and see.
KSHB.com/Chiefs.
Yes, that's right. At Todd Palmer, at Jacob71 on Twitter.
Totally nailed it. I'm so good at this marketing thing.
Yeah.
I'm all over the interwebs.
I like it. And the tweeter. With Mahomes, it was like we talked about at the top of it. It was something he needed to be able to know where he needs to go. Something Tyreek needed to know where they need to go long term. It's something a handful of guys that I think are going to be on that team long term, the Chris Jones of the world, that they need, Charvarius Ward, hopefully, and some other individuals. It's what they needed to know that so that they can be the driving force for the future on this. So
Jordan Lucas, who was absolutely crushed,
devastated. If you guys could have seen him in the tunnel, Darius Smith or one of our photographers got a great shot of it.
Attaboy D.
He had two teammates that were carrying him you'd see a guy after he'd hurt his ankle and everything. And he's crying, he's bawling. He gave everything he had, and he was so frustrated about how close they were. And I'm sure he's blaming himself for something he may have not done or something.
He missed someone.
Yeah, just something. Every single guy is going to go through that this week and
have that in their head
and be like, if I had done this, could this all have been differently? Is that
they're going to listen to the podcast and be angry?
Yeah, at us. So, guys, we do not work at this TV station.
My name's Mick Schaefer, and I like to be punched in the face.
Anyways,
just kidding. Please don't punch Mick Schaefer in the face. He's a very nice man, and he's got children. Think of the kids.
So, anyways, moving on. I feel for a lot of those guys, but at the same time, like Andy Reid said it best, I think a lot of those guys need to take those what ifs and take that experience and that frustration and use that as your fuel to get back to that point. And that's kind of what they're going to have to do. And I know Mahomes is going to do it.
Yeah.
Mahomes is going to be relentless, dude. That dude tasted the closest you could get to the ultimate prize. And I know he wants to hand that trophy to Clark Hunt. So, the Lamar trophy and the Lombardi trophy. And Mahomes is going to be the driving force going forward that puts these guys in that mentality to where they treat every series, every play in the future like that. So that's what I'm so excited about, is that they had that opportunity for him to experience that, to bring that down the road.
Just make sure he's in bubble wrap all during the off season.
Yeah.
but look, I mean, I agree. The future's bright with him. You know, I mean, if you've listened to this podcast, you knew long before Adam Schefter tweeted anything on Sunday morning that you know, because Therese Paylor of Yahoo Sports, friend of the podcast, has been talking about how Patrick Mahomes is going to be the first $200 million man.
Said it many times.
And it's going to be after next season. But the other part about that is, next year, Mahomes is only going to count $4.4 million against the cap. If ever there was a time for the Chiefs to throw some cash around and invest in pushing for a title, mm-hmm. and then let the chips fall out from there when you had to pay Mr. Mahomes his money, mm-hmm. and let's face it, they're going to pay that man. Mm-hmm. But next year, I mean, that's the year you push all in. And I think the Chiefs were always planning to push all in for 2019.
Right.
And I think 2018 snuck up on them, and they were way better than they expected to be in 2018.
Right.
And they maybe were caught a little bit off guard mm-hmm. with what they needed to do. But I think all along the plan has been push all in 2019. We got that. That's when the Super Bowl window is wide open. So, you know, I'm not saying that Patrick Mahomes is going to have 5,097 yards and 50 touchdowns again. That'd be absurd. It's only happened twice in the history of the NFL that a man's done that in the same season.
And but he doesn't need
that. He doesn't have to, exactly.
If you have a better defense, he doesn't need to be that guy. You can run the ball more.
Yeah, and you know, so it'll be interesting. But let's hear from Patrick Mahomes. And let's hear from him about the future.
Yeah, I mean, just not starting how we wanted to start. We scored, what, like 31 points in the second half, both games we played them. And so you just got to find ways to start better. It's something I'll look back on for my entire career and use it as something that I can find ways to win these games whenever I'm in them.
Well, and I think there are going to be a lot of postseason wins ahead.
Look at that. He's already looking about how it helps him in the future.
Yeah.
What a true competitor does.
I think there are going to be a lot of championship games and postseason moments ahead for Mahomes. Interesting. Yeah. It seemed like Mr. Tom Brady may feel the same way, right?
I mean, if you've looked on Twitter, you saw the report from Jeff Darlington of ESPN that said that Brady spoke with a chief security guard and wanted to chat with Mahomes after the game. And supposedly they gave him a private room to chat and talk together. So I don't think Brady does that on a regular basis with a lot of people. But I think he felt that it was kind of his duty, and I know this sounds.
You don't think he did it with Chad Pennington?
Yeah. and this is just me dragging something from it. What I truly believe is, I think in some weird ways, I think that was a private moment for him to kind of pass part of the torch of things he's learned and encouragement to kind of help Mahomes take that next step. Because I guarantee for Tom to go do that, that means Tom saw something special and was insanely impressed and wanted to let him know.
Yeah, and look, I think from afar, I mean, just like most Chiefs fans' relationship with Mahomes is somewhat from afar, it's hard not to be impressed with the way he carried himself, with the things that he said all year. Mm-hmm. You know, just with his demeanor when it comes to literally everything. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like, you know, the dude's perfect and doesn't have any flaw. You know, I don't want to overstate it here, but I think he's perfect for a franchise that needed this, mm-hmm. Needed a quarterback, needed to develop someone, and needed a guy that the city could rally around, the fan base could rally around. And I don't think that the Chiefs could have found a better ambassador from that standpoint than Patrick Mahomes. And then for him to go out and do what he did this year,
on the field and in the community, he does an awesome
everything,
job in the community.
Everything. It's insane. It's insane. One last thing, you know, and I just throwing it out there because I know that this is going to make your heart glad.
Yeah.
Before the divisional playoff round, I sneak attack hugged you, and then we had to recreate it for the championship game because you're so superstitious.
Yeah.
Now that they lost in overtime, we can probably throw that tradition out.
Yeah, no, that's gone away.
So now that means next year we're going to have to start a new Tickles pregame tradition.
That's a solid pass.
Come on, man. Ask my 4-year-old. I give the best Tickles.
You guys can have that.
All right.
Special bond.
Zerberts it is. All right. one thing, and look, I mean, we've talked about it many times on the podcast, but I really just want to bring it up because someone tweeted at me and I thought it was funny. So yeah. I really just want to bring it up. You don't think Bob's coming back next year? Bob Sutton, the defensive coordinator, right?
As I've said it many times on Twitter, I'll believe it when I see it or when it's said out loud. I'll believe that. But I do think, in my opinion, it's going to be a tough sell to fans and members in the media. And I know Andy doesn't care about, you know, that stuff. He's going to do what he's going to do. When Brett Veach and Clark, they're going to decide that together. And it's a tough thing to tell somebody that, you know, your services are no longer needed.
And to be, look, I'm not advocating for that. Not a personal thing about Bob Sutton. I don't think he did very good at his job the last couple years. Yeah. And I feel like that should matter when you have a chance to win a championship.
Yeah.
I've had past employers that apparently didn't think I did good enough at my job, and I don't work for them anymore, so... Right.
I think it's time for a new, younger, creative voice to lead that defense and give them a certain type of fire, passion, and intensity and unpredictability in what they're going to do. And I think the time's come where the organization needs to go in a separate direction. Because if you're not going to do those things when the Super Bowl is on the line, you're not going to do him in general. And he had 6 years for that to be the case. He especially had it in 2015, and he wouldn't do it against Brady. Then they're knocking at the doorstep again on Sunday. Didn't do it again against Brady whenever he had an offense that could help him out to where they don't have to tailor it to where the defense has to, you know, carry the thing. So it is what it is. But we'll see what ends up happening. But that'll definitely determine a lot of my move for 2019.
Well, there you go. There you go. So just do it for Nick, because.
So what was it that was messaged to you on Twitter?
Oh, well, that's what I was going to get to. So somebody was very excited. They think that Tony Romo should be the new defensive coordinator since he knows what the other team's offense is going to do every play already.
That is funny in that regard.
I am all in.
But he is watching it as it's happening, so it's not necessarily, you know, it's easier to watch it up in the booth when you know it's happening instead of being like, there's only three timeouts you can call to be able to tell him that, hey.
You don't think he can shout it fast enough like he sees the alignment and he can yell, Eric, they're going to throw the slant to Gronk.
Yeah, no. Okay, he's a smart mind. He was a great. He's a great commentator. I hope they don't lose him up in the booth. I enjoy listening to his games. I think they tempered him back this year and tried to take that away from him. And
dude, he was great tonight. And I didn't even get to hear all of it,
right?
You know, because of my other duties. But it was fantastic. The parts that I didn't get to listen to him.
Yeah.
All right. Are you going to watch the Super Bowl in 2 weeks, despite this week's heartbreak?
Of course. I'm going to watch the Pro Bowl, okay? I'm going to watch it all. All right? I'm going to watch the Skills Challenge.
Will you watch the Senior Bowl?
I hope to. I'm definitely going to DVR at worst case, but yeah. I'm going to watch it all. You know,
who impressed you in the East-West game?
I haven't got to watch that yet, but I will watch that. And I will watch the NFLPA Bowl. I will watch it all. Right. But what I do want to say is that I know somebody did make the comment to me through a text that, you know, they will remain nameless, and they're like, hey, so what are you going to do this offseason? Like, this is 24/7 for me. There is no offseason when it comes to the NFL. I eat, sleep, and breathe that stuff.
Shout out Sam Hartle. I believe it was Sam's text he's referring to.
I was trying to, you know, keep him anonymous, but,
hey,
you know.
Hey. Sam is one of the creative forces behind this podcast, so
I didn't know if he wanted anonymity.
I don't know why he would.
Well, you know,
I mean, he's got like a Twitter account too at Sam Hartle.
We robbed him of that opportunity.
That's right. All right. Well, we've decided that you get no privacy, Sam. Congratulations. All right. Who do you like? Are you going to be rooting for the Los Angeles Rams who won an overtime against the Saints and your old buddy Marcus Peters?
yeah.
Who I'm sure had delicious gumbo with Sean Payton tonight. Mm-hmm.
Gumbo.
Are you going to be rooting for the Patriots?
And
understand that there is a correct answer, and it's a direct reflection of your character.
I already know what route you're going to go with this, and I really don't
care. You do you?
At the end of the day, I don't care. But what I do
about
think,
me?
Or I'm talking about...
You don't care who wins? Oh, okay.
Yeah, but
that hurt. That hurt almost as much as the guy who said that he doesn't like Dustin Colquitt on my Twitter, too.
Oh, my goodness.
He's been blocked. Yeah, he's been blocked.
Okay.
Yeah. I blocked him. I blocked him, and then I went and let him back in, and then I blocked him again.
So that's why I can't see your Twitter anymore.
That's right.
No, but what I was going to say is I fully expect the Patriots to go out there and win. I think this was in my opinion, I truly believe the Chiefs Patriots was kind of the Super Bowl. Because that was a Super Bowl type performance, and I think with 2 weeks, Belichick against the Rams, oh boy, that's going to be tough.
I will say this: I think that the Rams with Aaron Donald match up okay in terms of being able to do some things against the run that the Chiefs, quite frankly, couldn't do.
And that's 100% true. So,
and then with Talib and Marcus Peters,
maybe they'll take away Edelman.
They'd be the first in this postseason. So, yeah.
Good luck to you, Wade Phillips.
But look, I'm going to be rooting for the Chargers because
the Chargers.
I was rooting for the Chargers last. I'm the other Los Angeles franchise. I'm going to be rooting for the Rams.
No.
I'm still trying to wrap my mind around these Los Angeles teams. If the Rams win,
that McVay tree for head coaches. Oh my gosh, everybody's going
to
be.
Do you know what would kind of be gross about it though? I remember like when the Rams moved back to St. Louis.
Yeah.
They'd only been there like a few years, mm-hmm. and they won a Super Bowl. You know, and here I was as a Chiefs fan, and never even got to experience anything remotely close to that, and thinking that it was just gross that this undeserving fan base got to celebrate a championship. Here we are again. If the Rams do go out and win in 2 weeks. Nobody in Los Angeles is even going to care.
There's going to be five people at the parade.
Yeah, I mean, well, no, there will be a few more people there. It'll be like Matthew McConaughey, you know, coming into a Texas basketball huddle. You know, they'll all glom on at the end because they want to be on TV and get on the camera. But it's just nobody's going to.
I didn't know Matthew McConaughey was shooting a movie.
It's
scenes where he's pretending to be an assistant coach or something. That's right. Nobody knows. But
I cannot wait to read former Kansas City Star reporter Kent Babb's think piece on Matthew McConaughey's role with the Texas Athletics.
All right.
That's right. Hey, guys, we're going to leave you with that. Hope you enjoyed it. This podcast has rambled on too long. It's after midnight and I'm loopy. So,
but it's not done. It's not the last one.
I'm going to have to say goodbye, Todd.
Goodbye.
See you guys.